You know, there's a reason for cautionary tales.
Then why don't more people heed their warnings?
I don't know. But after they hear my new show, they will think twice.
Oh yeah? About what?
Eating Tide Pods, playing with Ouija boards, talking to Karens, you name it. If you should heed caution, we're talking about it.
Check out Harper's brand new podcast, Cautionary Tales with Harper. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download podcasts.
And be sure to press subscribe and give us a review.
Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Subscribe wherever you download podcasts today.
Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, a woman hears the voice of a little girl calling out night after night. But who is the little girl? And what does she want?
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
855-853-4802, our phone number. Share your real ghost stories with us. Write in on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. If you like the program and you want more content, we got gazillions of loads of it. I don't know if that's really a thing, but what's that?
It is. You made it a thing.
A gazillions of loads of it, but yeah. There's thousands of episodes of the program. And if you want them all and you want our hundreds of EPP bonus episodes, all waiting for you exclusively as an extra podcast person, a supporter of our show, then sign up to be one at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. $5 a month gets you access to all the bonus content, those exclusive episodes, which new ones come out every single week. You get advanced episodes of the show with no ads in, so ad-free. You can listen to the show in advance with no commercials. You also get our ebook and our audiobook. Those two combined right there, it's like a $30 value. If you were to buy them through Amazon or Audible, you get that included. And there's a lot of other extras right there. You can sign up for an annual membership now on both platforms too. That gives you 1 month free. So choose what you like, $5 a month to go month to month, or do the annual membership and get a month free and everything I just talked about as well. Ghostpodcast.com, or if you like Patreon, patreon.com/realghoststories. Two places, same stuff, both place. Choose your platform that you prefer to use. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hi.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good.
I still have more from the episode the other day of talking about abandoned roadside attractions, because I so many times when driving by these things just want to stop and go and explore the abandoned roadside attraction, babe. I just want to stop.
Nobody likes Gina Vanelli.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people do.
Nope.
I think you're one of the few that don't.
No, I'm in the majority. Nobody likes Gina Vanelli.
I'm not sure about that. I think you actually might be the minority.
Okay.
On that one. But have you tried to like start an anti-Gina Vanelli Facebook page?
No, just because I don't need that much negativity in my life. So I just decided an anti-Gina Vanelli webpage.
Overwhelm.
Is too much.
It would be too many people trying to sign up.
It'd be too hard to keep track of everybody.
Just too many people signing up at once.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be a big mad rush.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. You'd end up getting Gina Vanelli joining it. Like, why do you guys hate me? Like, all I did was make some songs.
I know.
What's your problem? Anyway, we'll talk about some of these creepy roadside attractions throughout the show today. Some may be near you. I'm not advising to go visit them like out of your car, but they're worth driving by if they're in your area. I would if I was in the area of a lot of these. Let's go to our first ghost story, though, on today's episode. And let me just scroll here and here we can go. All right. I have never considered my house to be haunted until my 10th birthday, when a photo of my twin revealed a large solid blue orb in the background of the photo. We were reviewing the birthday photos. All of us, my mom, my older brother, my twin and me, tried to dismiss the abnormality as a reflection from the camera flash on the glass ball that sat in the background. But it was not. It was an orb. It was a perfect solid circle with a thin swirling pattern in it. Nothing could be seen behind it. We believe that this orb was my brother's guardian angel, a protector of some sort. Because it was near that death experience of being hit by a car when he was 7 and then falling down the stairs when he was 5 years old. Skipping to 3 to 4 years later, I had my own personal experience of death. I'm a type 1 diabetic with one night my blood sugar dropped exceptionally low to a point that I was unresponsive. If I were not for my dog, I would have died that night. My dog was not a service dog, but he was able to get my mom awake. My mom told me when my dog woke her up, she could just sense something was wrong. They went up to check on me. She was able to stabilize my blood sugar, but I don't remember anything from the night beside my mom shaking me and telling me I had to stay awake. After this experience, I felt like I've been more susceptible to the other side. It first stands out with dreams that turned out to be premonitions of the future events or strong feelings of something about to happen. However, not all these feelings turn out to be correct. It was not until I was 16 years old when I started to hear this little girl. I was in my room changing, and my mom was in my brother's room cleaning. All of a sudden, a voice of a little girl giggling came from my right side and traveled around me to my door. It sounded like it was coming from a distance with dragging tones to it, though it was loud enough for me to believe it was a little girl next to me. I called for my mom to ask if that noise came from her, and she said no. I know for a fact that it was not my mom's voice. There are not any little kids that live near us. Everyone is over 50 and have kids my age, 16 at the time or older. I brushed it off to as I was tired and was hearing things. Currently, due to COVID-19 and staying home for most of the time now, I've noticed, along with my dad, who is more on the doubtful side of these things, questioned certain sounds going on in the house. Started with an apparition that appeared outside by our deck. I was sitting at the dining room table doing classwork around 2 p.m., and from this view, I can see the yard and the entrance to the deck. We have the deck door right next to the dining table, and we keep the blinds on the deck doors about one-third of the way up so we can see the dogs when they want to come in. I was looking down at my work when I saw a movement at the corner of my eye. I looked at that area, and I saw my dad's navy blue work pants with the side pocket on his thigh and his worn-down work boots step into view and stand there as if he was looking out in the backyard. It was not unusual for him to come home early due to this work cutting hours because of COVID. I just thought, dad's home. He went back to school work. I waited and waited for him to come in, but he never did. I got up to check on where he went. His car was not in the driveway, so I asked my mom, who was redoing the upstairs where dad was, and I was asking her. I saw him pull into the driveway, and I asked him where he went, and he told me that he just got home. I was spooked for a while. A few weeks later, I was in bed getting ready to sleep when the same little girl voice I heard a few years prior jolted me up. Her voice was louder than before, but still has the lagging, distant tone. She said, "I have to go help Daddy." As each word she spoke, it grew fainter. That night, my 21-year-old self slept with a nightlight on. Once my dad was temporarily unemployed, he started to hear loud thumps upstairs as if something dropped. He came up into my room thinking I fell off the bed. I did not. I did not hear this noise from upstairs that day, so I was not sure what he was talking about. 3 days ago, I heard what he heard that one day. Both him and me were in the living room when a loud thud came from somewhere in the house. I went upstairs to see if something fell, but nothing was out of place as far as I could tell. The creepy part is my room is right above my bedroom.
So there's something just in that part of the house where it's the bedroom that seems to have all the activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What exactly it is that's the question.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of breadcrumbs there to guess or make assumptions or anything like that.
So I'm kind of surprised that the activity didn't start till he was like 10, mm-hmm. because usually it's, you know, more active as you're little because, for one, ghosts seem to know that nobody's going to believe you when you say that as a little kid. But when you're 10, they start to actually take into account what you have to say. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of surprised that there wasn't any activity before then.
Yeah.
That was what struck me as odd about this story.
Me too. I'm wondering if, you know, was there something or someone that had recently passed that, you know, became a guardian of some sort on the other side? Was it just maybe it was always there and now it was being noticed more?
Or something brought into the home that maybe had something attached to it?
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities mm-hmm. as far as what could have been going on in that story with what has happening in that house. Thank you for sharing that that story with us. It's funny. I think there's different points in life where people take you the different levels of seriousness.
Yeah.
Like turning 30 mm-hmm. was like different too. It was like, even my boss at the time, Bev mm-hmm. said to me, she's like, oh, you're 30 now. Now people will take you more serious. I'm like, what? She's like, I don't know. It's just a thing. It seemed like when I turned 30, like people suddenly like listen to me more.
It's true.
And it's like, okay. And I noticed it. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. So what comes at 40 now that I'm approaching that mark?
People stop taking you as seriously because now you're on the downhill slope.
Now they're like, oh, it might just be early onset dementia.
Yeah.
So you get like 10 good years. Mm-hmm. You get the 30s. And then after that, it's like you're back into the dismissal category.
I don't know that. I doubt that.
But I mean, I always look at like, you know, as long as someone's not suffering from dementia, if they're, you know, with it, I always like to hear from older people, mm-hmm. you know, on their insights and things. Sometimes it's way off base, but if it's something, you know, that doesn't involve things that they may not understand, you know, I think that's a good thing. But, you know, at the same point, I'm the first person to say, as I get older, I'm sure there's plenty of shit I'm not going to be in vogue with, you know, at certain ages and have any clue as to what the hell's going on.
Well, I think it depends on what stage of dementia, because, you know, they're in my experience with family members, it's like certain parts of their memory go first.
Sure.
Like my grandfather, his recent memory went first.
Yeah.
But he could tell you everything about his childhood. Mm-hmm. And we stayed up to 2 a.m. one time, just him telling me everything about his childhood, because he knew his state of mind was going. And so he wanted me to know, you know, as much as he could remember. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't write people off because they have dementia.
No.
It just depends on what kind of day or what kind of, you know, where they're at that moment.
It depends. You have to be selective on what to discuss.
And I think they're highly susceptible to paranormal activity.
Yeah.
And that's what I really worry about, is because people don't take them seriously. Mm-hmm. And yet they're probably seeing things that are there. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, how do we know that this is actually happening, and how do we know that it's not actually happening?
It's the same way with kids. Mm-hmm. It's like it goes reverse back to in terms of people taking you seriously. Your little kid, you're seeing, you know, it's your imagination. You're really old. Oh, you're seeing things. It's like the same reaction. Mm-hmm. But I think just as susceptible in both areas, if not more, on the back end of it, because you've lived a full life if you get there.
Right.
And there's more likelihood to be visitors mm-hmm. That you've come across along the way. 855-853-4802. Our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Splendid China in Kissimmee, Florida. Have you ever been to Splendid China or heard of Splendid China?
Never heard of that.
Built over 70 years as a replica of the country of China. It was an experiment in creating a completely different kind of theme park. It was 70 acres, rather, not built over 70 years. It opened in 93, operated to 2003. So it had a good 20-year run. Or no, was it 10-year? 10-year run. It was funded by the agency of the Chinese government and sparked controversy with locals fearing it was an act of communist propaganda. Many Chinese performers who worked there defected and sought asylum in the U.S. When the park closed, vandals took over and stole everything that wasn't nailed down. So now it looks like a massive, like 1980s style Chinese restaurant with multiple buildings. So it has, you know, like the awnings and everything of what, you know, you would think of almost like the China area of Disney.
Yeah. And Epcot.
Yeah. At Epcot. Except it's abandoned and creepy as hell. Here's one that we know about, and I don't remember if you've said you've gone there or not. Joyland.
I was never allowed to go to Joyland when it was open or closed.
Joyland in Wichita, Kansas. It was an amusement park operated from 1949. It then shut down for a good period of time and did reopen in 2006. how long had it been closed before it reopened in 06?
I don't know.
Remember? I wonder.
It closed down in like the 90s because I remember we would have school nights at Joyland.
Okay.
And I would beg to go, but it was in a fairly dangerous, gang ridden part of town.
Yeah.
So that's why my parents were like, no, I don't think we're going to do that.
The fear was just like parking your car.
Yeah.
Even. I mean, because it was in a really shady part of the city. And that was, I mean, I always wanted to go take looks and pictures of it after it closed. Mm-hmm. I was afraid to even drive around that area for fear of getting shot. And not all of Wichita is like that. There's a good, it's like any bigger city. You may not realize the size Wichita is. It's a fairly large city. But there's like any big city, you have parts of town that just aren't very safe. And this happened to be an amusement park that when it was built, probably was not that bad of a part of the town.
No, it wasn't. It was in a fairly popular part of town.
But I remember in 06 when it reopened, I had just moved to Wichita and it was one of my first weeks there. They were trying to reopen this park that had been defunct for, I want to say, at least 5 years, maybe 5 to 10 years.
Oh, it was more like 10.
And we were just saying 5 to 10 years, outdoors, defunct park, nature takes back over.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a lot of cleanup. They got it. I mean, it's been going on like, oh, it'll reopen. And then like it always got held back. It always got pushed back. And finally, the morning came of the reopening of Joyland.
Mm-hmm.
And we had with our radio station a promotion set up where our morning show co-host was going to ride the roller coaster like all day.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's like going to try and set some sort of record of some sort. And leading right up to this wooden roller coaster being reopened, it came up literally to like 3 a.m. of someone trying to finalize approval for it to reopen within a few hours.
Yeah.
It did not get the green light.
No, it was condemned.
It got condemned that night. And 3-4 more hours later, he would have been on it riding. But that's how close it came to trying getting this thing up. And they're like, no, it's not going to work. It's condemned.
Yeah.
Did they ever get it running again?
They have been trying to get Joyland reopened. I mean, this is like the third major push to get it reopened. There was like... That was like the second major push. There's been one since where I want to say it was like right as we left Wichita, like a 19-year-old was really, really working on fundraising for trying to get Joyland open again.
And that failed.
Yeah. I mean, it was just too much. But... it was funny because I was working at that in 2006 at a competing theme park in Wichita that had just opened that I have mentioned numerous times. And Joyland, in a snarky way, sent us a plaque. Dear Wild West World, good luck. Best wishes, Joyland.
Mm-hmm. And Wild West World closed within like 2 months.
Yeah, but Joyland never reopened. So.
Yeah, that's true. It was like two people who were like on the bench, both like insulting each other.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like I can play better than you. Well, you're on the bench too. Well, I still can do better. And it's like, okay.
I almost brought you a Joyland shirt. I saw one at an antique mall the other day when I was in Wichita getting Libby. And I know it wouldn't have fit, but I thought that'd be cool just to have.
Yeah, just to put up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wanted to, I look back and I've seen pieces of the park at antique stores and I wish I would have bought some parts like signs and stuff that I'd seen. 2018, it was purchased by auction for $198,000. Most of it has since either been burned or demolished. There's been random arson fires. The coaster is gone. It is, for all intents and purposes, you'll find rubble there. Mm-hmm. I have a friend, Manny, who's been on this show before, who sometimes goes over there with his camera because he has like no fear of anything. And and he just wanders around and makes friends with people. He's like the golden retriever of people.
Manny's the best. Manny actually married us.
He did. Yeah. And he's just, he's the nicest guy in the world. And he's just like the most approachable, nice, mm-hmm. friendly guy you'll ever meet. And he'll go in there and send me pictures every now and then, but for really, there's not much left of Joyland. There's no way to reopen it at this point.
No.
It's gone. But it was a creepy one. Chippewa Lake Park in Medina County, Ohio. That's another one of those similar, 1978. It looks like that one closed. And we'll talk about a couple others. Let's go to a ghost story here in the program. Hi.
Hey, Tony, this is Jim Baca. So my story started back in 1975. On Good Friday, 1975, my stepdad and my mom came home from a bar. I was 12 years old. 11 years old. So they came back from a bar. Me and my sister were at home. We had an attached garage. And anyways, my mom came home first. They had met at a bar, so they were in two different cars. And he was quite the mean stepdad. He would beat my mom, and he was mean to us sometimes when he was drunk. But when he wasn't drunk, he was really nice. So I got along. I really cared about the man. He was around my life for about 2 years. His name was Gary. My mom was Rachel. So anyways, and that night in Good Friday, early in the morning, like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, my mom comes home and wakes me up. My sister's still asleep because I'm closer to the bedroom to the front door in the hallway. And my stepdad comes home. And she's already telling me he's going to hurt us, he's going to do this. So my mom pulls out a gun, and my mom caught my stepdad at the front door. And he fell on the threshold. I was standing next to her. I actually helped her cock the gun because she didn't know how to do it. It was an old .22 Luger. So anyways, he died that night, and most of it was because he hit his head and he was drunk and his blood was so thin that that's what made him die. So now let's jump forward real far away. He also had a dog. His dog name was Thor. The Thor was everything to him. It meant God is thunder. He was system trained. He was obedience trained. So he was a tack trained dog. So anyways, that will take part as far as the ghost part goes. So now we moved into a house over on James Street, over in Covina, I believe it was. We did live in Hacienda Heights, where he died. And I was sitting in a room in the kitchen, which was a smaller house. Me and my sister, my mom lived there. And there was an empty field next to us. So I'm sitting down one day, and as clear as day, I could see my dad. He was a cowboy type guy. We lived in Sequoia National Forest. We had horses. We did barrel racing, we did rodeos, and I look and I watch him walk towards me, and this is just really creepy. He's walking towards me. I didn't feel threatened. I didn't feel scared. He had on Levi's. He used to always wear denim shirts with the button up pearl snaps, and he had his dog with him. He had a pair of boots on. He had his dog, and he was walking through a field, and I could see him as clear as day. He had his straw cowboy hat on. He was just walking towards me, and I'm watching him. Like through peripheral vision, I didn't take my eyes up him. I didn't look at him. And as I turn around, he just fades away. It wasn't scary. It wasn't bad. Anything like that. So now we'll really jump ahead into about 2007. So that happened in 75. In 2007, I'm married. I'm already actually on my second wife at that point because it's been 30 some years already. So I take my current wife, my son from my first wife, my son from my second wife, and a girlfriend of my oldest son. We go by the house in Hacienda Heights where this happened. The house is totally boarded up. It has long grass. It's weeds. And this is a really nice neighborhood in Hacienda Heights, California. Super nice neighborhood. And you can look this up on Ancestry.com. There's articles on it. If not, I can send you the actual articles of, when he got shot that night. It's totally boarded up in a nice neighborhood. The only house that just looks it looks creepy as could be. So I ended up talking to my sister about it, and I never told my sister that I saw my dad or, back when we were a kid over on James Street. So now I go ahead and I tell my sister, and my sister tells me that she actually saw him at that same house looking through the window at her one time. And then I found out my mom had seen him in a screen room. It was one of those screen sunrooms that was attached to the master bedroom. So we actually had all seen him at that same house. But it was years later we talked about it. So that was the main thing with him. Now, when my other son was born in 1999, walking over by the hospital. Now we're in Concord, California. I'm walking by the hospital. My wife is down there. I'm coming back to go visit her. So I had gone home to shower. I had to go to work or something. I come back and it's kind of dim, and we're by a bar track, which is like a rail station. And I see him walking again, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, no way, you know. And it was just like, not again, because that other, I guess, sighting, I don't know, that other thing has always been so real in my head that I see him again. And this time I see my older, he was my stepbrother. His name was Michael Disson. And I see him with him, and I'm like, what the, you know, and I look, and I'm looking, and again, it fades away. And I talked to my wife about it. She's the one who had seen the house with me. And I looked Michael up. Michael died in 1998. I had no idea, because when my stepdad was killed by my mom, my stepbrothers and sisters, they never talked to us again. That ended it. But I saw him the year after he died. And I looked him up. He ended up, I guess, died of cancer like at 38 years old, which was older than my stepdad. My stepdad was probably like 32 when he died. So anyway, it's a creepy story, but it's all verifiable. It happened in Hacienda Heights. My mom is Rachel Disson. My dad is Gary Disson. And it happened on Barada Street over in Hacienda Heights, March 1975. Okay, thanks. If you have any questions, give me a call, 510-5.
Yep. Danny, the phone number. Thank you, though.
I appreciate that, but yeah, we don't want to broadcast your phone number. I think when somebody dies violently like that, I personally think there's a higher incidence of them becoming a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's because they died violently or quickly, or if it's just they feel like they have not finished their life. But that, to me, I'm not at all surprised that he's still around.
I think there's a confusion. Mm-hmm. I think it's there's different planes of once you've passed, you know, moving up and down, like, okay, there's next level. This is, and I base this on all of the conversations I've had with people that I interview who investigate, and it's really getting interesting as technology progresses, especially with things like spirit boxes and things of that nature, in terms of what many are believing they're getting in terms of answers. This may sound, if you listen to the Grave Talks, you've probably heard this concept now, but this may sound crazy to you. And I know that's a leap on this show.
Yeah.
But there are many people who believe that when they're communicating with spirits on the other side through things like a ghost box, they have what they're calling and terming the phrase, they're engineers on the other side. Mm-hmm. So as if there's another person on the other side who wants to help communicate with us. Maybe they were an engineer in life and they have an interest in it over there. And they're working with the devices that we're coming up with to connect over there and then help facilitate bringing people to talk to as we're using these devices, because the stories that I've heard and some of it, it's like very similar voices that keep coming up. They have names. They're usually protective and they try and keep bad people away from coming through, but it's still a possibility. I've heard from many people now who investigate where it's like, I have an engineer and his name is Mike, and there's another one named so-and-so. And he's, I talk to him first. And I ask if it's okay if we can talk to somebody, and I ask if we can get so-and-so. And then it's almost like an operator, an old school operator. Mm-hmm. But they're on the other side and they have the same voice and they come through, and it's hard to hear on a spirit box unless you've been trained in it and you use it frequently. But there's certainly some noises that are coming through that are not normal, that are not just the scanning of the frequencies. And I didn't know enough about it to have much of an opinion. So I can't say I've always been kind of skeptical. I've always not known enough about it.
Yeah.
And as I've learned more and more about it, I had one of the people who were integral in the research and the creation of what we now know today as a spirit box on the show the other day. And it was really interesting to hear because he brought up some of these concepts that I've heard from other people who use spirit boxes regularly. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I coined that phrase. Okay, explain. And it's very interesting to hear how the other side, it seems, with some of these devices is just as interested in trying to communicate back with us.
Yeah.
And they're realizing there's this influx of people now that are trying to do it beyond just like a Ouija board. And there's always people trying to communicate with the dead. Mm-hmm. But at the level at which it's being done, I think is different than the past in terms of numbers of people.
Do you think it's because technology keeps increasing on our side that mm-hmm. it is increasing on their side too?
I think so. I don't know that technology is necessarily increasing on their side, but I think because it's increasing on our side, it's providing more windows for them to get through. And it's providing more options for and more things for them that they can manipulate that maybe otherwise didn't really exist on our side to manipulate. They've always had certain things they could manipulate, but we're like creating devices that are designed specifically for them to manipulate based on what we're seeing seems to work.
Yeah.
And I really don't think we're that far off. I could see it being in our lifetime having something where it's almost like a phone call to the other side. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty damn close to a two-sided conversation. We're almost there now in some cases where people are talking back and forth and it's a coherent conversation for more than just two words.
Sure.
And it makes sense and things add up. And I know there's a lot of people out there who will say about the spirit box, and I've never used one. I'm not an investigator. I'm just basing it on all the stories I've heard. But we'll say, oh, you know, that's just, it's phooey. That's not true. But EVPs are real or this or that. I don't think it can discount anything. I think some things work better for some people. I think some people are better conduits of things than other people. But there is certainly something there that's getting through. And you can go to the semantics of is it good, is it bad, is it this or is it that. I think that's beyond the point.
Right.
I think you can have good and bad no matter anything you're doing, but there's something there. And if they're able to keep honing in on that, I don't know that you're ever going to eliminate the part of the equation where the bad could be there. But I think you can increase the amount that you get and the coherency of the conversation over time with the technology that people are coming out with. So... that's interesting to watch.
It is.
Nothing that I want to go grab a ghost box next week or have anybody send me one.
No.
But I love hearing the stories.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting observation as we get a lot of those. And you can check out some of those interviews over on our other podcast, The Grave Talks. And I can tell you right now who I was talking to, so you can look up the interview. When it gets posted here in a handful, I don't think as this episode airs, it's probably not on the Grave Talks yet. Bruce Halliday is who I talked to the other day. That episode will be airing around the beginning of November on the Grave Talks. If you're a grave keeper over there, you'll get it a little bit in advance to hear it. But it was a very intriguing conversation about ghost boxes. If you've ever wondered about them, it's a good one to hear and have a lot of your questions answered. And that right there, I think, is where we're going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like our program, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person if you can. That's a supporter. It's only $5 a month to get access to all the bonus episodes. You put new ones up every single week. You get our ebook, our audiobook, all of that there. If you want to do the annual membership, you get 1 month free too. So check it out. Patreon.com/realghoststories or at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.